Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's going on, clones? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is great to be with you on a Wednesday. Lots of show. Lots and lots of show today, and a really good one for you. So let's get some. So where to start? Where to start with a really good show. Lots of football to get to today, both pro and college. But I want to start off today with some UFC. Specifically, I want to start with my man, Dana White, who, incredibly enough, has outdone himself yet again. I've said it before, but I want to repeat it right now. There is nobody in sports like Dana White. There is nobody like this guy, and he proved it once again. You see, Dana White has a lot on his plate right now. UFC Fight Night on Friday night in Vegas. UFC Fight Night on Saturday night in Australia. UFC 231 next Saturday in Toronto. And of course, UFC 232 on December 29th in Vegas, which marks the return of John Jones. So safe to say, Dana White is a very, very busy man. But not so busy that he couldn't take a run at his old pal, Oscar De La Hoya. I'm sorry, did I say old pal? I meant punching bag, speed bag. And did I say Oscar De La Hoya? What I meant to say was Oscar De La Weirdo, as Dana White calls him. So Dana was on UFC Unfiltered, and he went off on the aftermath of the Tito Ortiz-Chuck Liddell fight, which took place on Saturday night. Now, if you didn't see that fight, Ortiz knocked out Liddell in the final minute of the first round. It was ugly. Really, really ugly. Ugly to the point of sad. Ugly to the point where anybody watching had to be thinking, why is Chuck Liddell fighting? Why isn't anybody stopping him from fighting? And Dana certainly was one of the guys who was thinking just that.
Listen, I love Chuck Liddell, and I don't ever want to badmouth Chuck Liddell, or even, you know, people even think I'm remotely badmouthing Chuck Liddell. But the reality is, first of all, let's say this first. I heard last week the cokehead, Oscar De La Weirdo, is talking that I don't have any place to tell guys when to retire. You know, I don't tell fans when. First of all, it's called friendship.
All right, so first of all, that's a cokehead blast and an Oscar De La Weirdo.
Oscar De La Weirdo.
Quick succession. It's a hell of a 1-2 combination right there. But Dana was not finished. Dana went on.
Friendship, you f***ing cokehead. I've been friends with Chuck Liddell, you know, for 20 years. And the reality is that Chuck Liddell retired when he should have retired. 8-9 years ago, however long it was.
I want to make sure you heard that first line. He said, quote, it's friendship, you bleeping cokehead.
Friendship, you f***ing cokehead. I've been friends with Chuck Liddell, you know, for 20 years. And the reality is that Chuck Liddell retired when he should have retired. 8-9 years ago, however long it was.
Quote, it's friendship, you bleeping cokehead. And there's more. He also had some for Tito Ortiz, which is not surprising given their relationship. And he had another nickname for Oscar as well.
Tito and Oscar De La Dummy were made for each other, man. Those two f***ing nutheads. De La Hoya is a moron. An absolute moron. And I don't know how Chuck allowed himself to be talked into this stupid shit.
Tito and Oscar De La Dummy were made for each other. Those two bleeping nutheads. De La Hoya is a moron, an absolute moron, and I don't know how Chuck allowed himself to be talked into this stupid bleep. End of quote. This is not me saying these things. This is Dana White. So now we've got an Oscar De La Dummy, a moron, a bleeping cokehead, and a bleeping nuthead. And to me, that's all bleeping incredible. Once again, the president of a major professional sport taking a run at another major figure and dropping F-bombs and cokehead shots.
F***ing cokehead.
Bleeping cokehead. As an example, can you imagine Roger Goodell calling Gary Bettman a bleeping cokehead? What if MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred just started dropping F-bombs in his interviews about pace of play or mound visits? That'd be incredible, right? And yet, this is exactly what Dana White's doing, and he's doing it on the regular. And it's still amazing. And he wasn't stopping at just Oscar De La Weirdo. I mean, De La Hoya. He also had thoughts for the California State Athletic Commission as well.
And Chuck Liddell's almost 50 years old and has no business fighting anymore. And the fact that the state of California even let that fight happen is disgusting. Disgusting. You know, Chuck Liddell has an incredible legacy. He's a huge superstar in this sport. You know, so of course, as a friend, anybody who claims to be a friend of Chuck Liddell and was anywhere near this fight is full of shit. They're not a friend of Chuck Liddell. To let him go in and fight this fight is terrible.
He's right. He's right. It was bad. It was terrible. Liddell did not belong in a fight like that, or any fight. And it was painful to watch. And while Oscar De La Hoya saw the weekend's fight as the start of Golden Boy Promotions moving into MMA, Dana hoped it was the start of actually something else.
I hope somebody talks De La Hoya into fighting again, okay? I hope the state of California makes the fight, and I hope he gets knocked out just like Chuck Liddell did in the first round. Cokehead nutball.
I hope he fights again, and I hope he gets knocked the hell out in the first round like Liddell. Bleeping cokehead nutball.
Cokehead nutball.
Bleeping cokehead nutball. I have nothing to add to bleeping cokehead nutball. Because there is nothing you can add to bleeping cokehead nutball. That's your walk-off shot. The phrase mic drop has been overused to the point of uselessness, but bleeping cokehead nutball is the ultimate mic drop.
Cokehead nutball.
Well, he was fired up. The president of a major sports league going with bleeping cokehead nutballs. Another Hall of Famer. Love it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so in addition to that, yesterday, there were a couple of really organic things that happened on the program that were awesome. Somebody brought up the old school text contest, and that got kind of nice. And then some of you tried to reset the hack off yet again. I said, listen, the hack off had its time and had its place. It was a good thing until it wasn't, and then I buried it. I put it down. I gave it the humane treatment. I buried it in the backyard, never to be brought back ever again. Yet many of you continue to try to bring it back. I finally said yesterday, fine, you want it? Lay it out for me. Make the argument for me. Tell me who the field would be, knowing full well that there's not a field for it. I'm a little surprised how well you did. I'm going to revisit this today. I'm still not bringing it back, but I'm going to revisit it and actually consider it. We are joined now by the head basketball coach at Mississippi State. Fourth season at Mississippi State. Led the Bulldogs to 25 wins last season. Led UCLA to 3 straight Final Fours. A National Coach of the Year Award winner. Conference Coach of the Year in 3 different conferences. Mississippi State's out quickly. 5-1 this year. They are number 25 in both polls. Mississippi State at Dayton Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on CBS Sports Network. Ben Howland is my guest. Ben, it's good to have you back. How are you, Ben?
I'm great, Jim. Great to be with you.
Ben, great talking to you. So you're coming off a 25-win season. You're in the top 25 right now. There is a ton, Ben, to like about your team. What is life like in Starkville for you these days?
Good. You know, I'm excited about our team. I really, we have a great group of veterans returning from last year. We've added a couple good pieces, both freshmen and Reggie Perry and Robert Woodard. I thought we had a really good spring, summer, and fall, and it's exciting for us. Our league, the SEC, is incredibly strong this year, especially top heavy when you look at Tennessee and Kentucky and Auburn. You got 3 of the top 10 teams, in my opinion, in the country. And so this league is really good, and it's a fun time to be coaching at Mississippi State for sure.
Ben Howland joining us. Ben, let me get you to go back to the freshman. Reggie Perry had 16 points. He had 11 rebounds in that win over Alcorn State. He came in with a ton of hype. What do you make of the way he's dealing with the adjustment to the college game and then everything that comes along with that?
I think he's really doing a good job. You know, first of all, he has a great body to play right away. And a lot of freshmen have to come in and get bigger and stronger. I mean, Reggie's 6'9", 245 pounds, solid muscle, really has great basketball, genes in his background. His dad was an outstanding player at Mississippi State, Al, a really good point guard. And, you know, Reggie was McDonald's All-American, really, has been playing since he could walk. And so he's got a great feel. He's an outstanding passer, a really good rebounder. And I think he's really going to be a fine player for us.
Mississippi State head coach Ben Howland, my guest. So, Ben, he does not look like a normal freshman. The same might be said about Robert Woodard. I mean, you've coached elite players for a long, long time. How different are elite players now versus maybe 10 years ago or more? Are they the same or are they better?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, both of these kids are unique. Like Robert Woodard II, also a former son of a Bulldog. His dad played here, his former player, Robert Sr., real good player. And Robert grew up 20 minutes from campus, which was a blessing for us to have him so close. But he is 6'6", 231 pounds, and comes in with a man's body, you know, right away. That's just incredible. But both these kids are high level players, big time recruits, and you know they get to play a lot more. Like they both did USA basketball, both Robert and Reggie, so they had a lot of experience, at a young age, which I think really gives them a great advantage in terms of playing all over the world, all over the country, playing against high level players since they were youngsters. That gives you a real step up, I think, as a freshman in college compared to maybe even as far back as 10 years ago.
We're talking to Ben Howland. So, Ben, everywhere you've gone, you've had things turn around pretty quickly. You've built a winner. So you know how this is done. How do you know exactly when your system and your culture have taken root in a program? What are the signs that let you know that it is working?
Well, number one is you have your players coaching the younger kids, and you have leadership coming within your team itself. And that's what we really have right now. So I feel great about that. You know, Q Weatherspoon, who's been all SEC the last 2 years, our leading scorer and best player. And Eric Holman, who's also our other senior, has been, a three-year starter. Those kids have done a great job leading. You know, we have Abdul Adu and Nick Weatherspoon, Q's little brother back, that both started last year as freshmen. And then Lamar Peters, who's now back for his junior campaign and did a great job down the stretch of last year leading our team and running the point for us. So we have a lot of experience. We have a lot of talent that I'm excited about. And we're going to be unbelievably tested in Dayton. You know, Dayton has 13,500 fans who are showing up to every game. Incredible basketball support there in Dayton, Ohio. That's why they hold the first four in every year in the NCAA tournament in Dayton, because it's such a great basketball community. So this will be a game just like an SEC conference game here in late November, playing against a very physical team that's really well coached. You know, I watched them play against Virginia, who's one of the best teams in the country, and it was a dogfight. I mean, these guys are physical. I watched them beat Butler. This is going to be a big-time test for us early in this season.
I was going to ask you about that. It's Friday night. That is a big-time test early on, and that's a tough, tough environment. You know, Ben, you're in your fourth season with the Bulldogs right now, and you keep taking that next step. And I can tell just listening to you, because you and I go back so far, and I've always been fascinated by what you've done at every single stop. I can tell how pumped and how juiced you are by the SEC. Whenever I talk to Dan Mullen and Joe Moorhead, we always end up talking about Stark Vegas, what it's like to be in Mississippi State and the fan base there. So how has Stark Vegas been for you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Stark Vegas. The thing that's great about being here in the state of Mississippi is it's all about the universities. There are no pro sports teams, so everything revolves around Mississippi State or Ole Miss, if you're an Ole Miss fan. And one of the things that's really unique, Jim, there are so many people that have second homes, condominiums, that really have their lives revolve around coming to support football every weekend that they play at home. They come to all the women's games. They come to our games. They go to all the baseball games. This is really a big form of entertainment for them, is coming to support their team week in and week out and spend a lot of time here in Starkville. This is the quintessential, small southern college town, phenomenal people, great community and environment. So we really enjoyed it. And, you know, you and I go all the way back to our days in Santa Barbara, amazingly, 35 years ago. And, you know, I just am so in awe of what you've done with your career and everything that you've brought to the world of sport, and just what a phenomenal job you do.
Pan, I'd say the same thing about you. You know, you and I, 35 years, I mean, I don't want to be the old guy who says, where the hell did all that time go? But where the hell did all that time go? Ben, I mean, we came up together. I can remember when you were battling and grinding and interviewing, and you got the opportunity, and you made the most of the opportunity. Ben, I'll never forget a Final Four when you and I sat together, and you got that UCLA job, and I'm like, this is mind-blowing. Like, I understand how this happened, and you earned it, but given that you grew up in Southern California, and you were so awed by that program, it was so surreal, right? I mean, do you remember what you thought, what went through your mind when you got that job?
Well, as a young kid growing up, you know, and seeing, you know, the incredible success Coach Wooden had there, I mean, that to me was always the pinnacle of college basketball. So that was, you know, an unbelievable blessing to have had that opportunity to be there for 10 years. And I really, really, in fact, I just got the phone with Aaron Aflalo about 20 minutes ago, and you know, those are things that are special to me, is to have those relationships with those special guys. And, you know, he was one of the cornerstones of helping us build that program. And you know, so it's always going to be special in my heart. But I'm really excited about what I'm doing right now and with these kids, and have a special group of guys that I think we can do something pretty phenomenal this year if we're fortunate enough to stay healthy. And that's always a key, is staying in good health.
I can hear it in your voice. One last thought, Ben. So it's year number four. You've taken the next step each season. What does the next step look like for this team, and how do you go about taking it?
Hey, bottom line is we got to, what you're just saying, we got to grind every day. We got to keep improving and get better. We have to compete. We've got to learn and keep growing as a team, and keep fighting. And, you know, it's early on right now, and we're going to have three of our next four games are at Dayton, Clemson in New Jersey on a neutral, and Cincinnati at home. So we're going to learn a lot more about ourselves here over the course of the next 10 days.
Mississippi State 5-1. They're number 25 in both polls. Next test Friday night at Dayton, right here on CBS Sports Network. Ben, couldn't appreciate you anymore. So good to have you back, Ben. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you.
You know how I always say that if I sit here and I give you what you want, my career would have ended years ago. It's my job not to give you what you want, but to give you what you need and to make good choices. However, every once in a while, I will give you what you want. So why don't we talk Hack Off for a minute? You know, you miss a little, you miss a lot. I've said that a million times on this show, and I'll probably say it a million more. Miss a little, miss a lot. Because yesterday, two different old school resets came up, and it was completely organic. If you missed yesterday's show, you missed a reset of the ill-fated text contest. Text. We used to have a text contest. Best text wins a prize. And some of the guys that participated, it's much like it is right now with Twitter and email. Some people only came through on the text. They would only text the program. They wouldn't call the program. They wouldn't email the program. They would simply text the program. And they had their handles. Ron Full of Rage. A Ron Full of Rage email set the whole thing up. And the next thing you know, we're talking about the text contest back in the day. People like Emilio Textavez, Wes the Fat Kid, Ugly Bob, Ron Full of Rage. I mean, it was fun. It was a thing back in the day. And then after that, a Vinnie Mac reset came through on Twitter, which led to a discussion about the Hack Off. The Hack Off, which I put down back in 2013. And for those of you who do not know, from 2010 to 2013, I held an event called the Hack Off. It was the Friday before the Smack Off. If the Smack Off was for the best of the best, the Hack Off was for the worst of the worst. But there were stakes. The winner of the Hack Off got an invite to the Smack Off. All right? So to me, that would have been the biggest upset ever, right? That'd be like somebody playing their way into the NCAA tournament as a, I don't know, a 250 seed or a 300 seed, and then somehow ran the table. So that was the prize. Vinnie Mac won it in 2010. Ray Ray in Tampa won it in 2011. Jolene in Farmington dominated it in 2012, and then nobody won in 2013 because it was so bad that I pulled the plug mid-show. Much like I did to the ponytail when he tried its week that was. I pulled it mid-segment. And ever since I pulled the plug, a grip of you have wanted me to bring it back. So yesterday, I said this. Stop talking, start walking. Name names. I don't think this thing can work. But if you think it could work, put some names on it. And you did. And even though I did not get to it yesterday, I kept the list of the 8 most submitted names on Twitter and email. And since I asked you to do this, I probably should run it back. I probably should pay it off. What the hell? Every once in a while, I'll give you clones what you want, not what you need. Or at least in this way, as part of a conversation. For the sake of conversation, let's look at the 8 names that you submitted and see if a 2019 hack off would actually work. Again, these submissions are straight from the clones. They are not from me. I'm not calling these people hacks. Well, a couple of them. I'm not calling these people hacks. You are. It's your list, not my list. Here are the most 8 or the 8 most submitted names. Starting with Josh in Detroit.
Hey, Romy, thanks for the vine. Don't worry, Jim. I'm not calling for a smoker. I'm just calling to smoke a fool.
That's not a good call. No.
Also on your list, Matt in L.A.
Now, as far as LeAngelo Ball, a.k.a. Jello Testicle, and the LV3, hey, man, they caused a damn international incident.
Matt, talk to me. Why is LeAngelo Ball, quote, Jello Testicle?
His nickname is Jello. He wants to be a big baller. Hey, well, what else is a ball? A testicle, especially when it messes up.
It's Matt in LA if you need him. Also on your list, not my list, your list, Parody Larry.
Hit the road, Dak. Your Super Bowl dream is no more. Lost to the Pack. And say goodbye to Romo. Hey, Tiger, you want to say hi to Romy? Hey, Van Smack. My glutes feel good. My golf swing doesn't look good. I don't like my chances.
No. You know, I'm starting to think this hack-off thing might work. Also on your list, of course, Jeff in San Antonio.
Pretty close to a year from when I called and, you know, created my infamous persona. So I just wanted to call and celebrate that anniversary and let you know that Hawk is definitely in need of some serious coaching because I flew out to San Diego last week to make an impromptu visit and the dude shot me down as soon as I got off the plane and said that I was not cool enough to show up. So at least I don't drive a 200,000-mile Camry. So war me, war my fiance, and of course, war Jordan. Keep it real.
All right, so my man just called. He's a badass, Jeff in San Antonio. I said there will never be another Jolene, but the closest thing I've seen to Jolene is Lauren in Naples.
What up, Van Smack? Mona, just lay off the cigarettes. Can't really understand you, girl. It might sound better if you're not running from the Piggly Wiggly, you know, with a damn PBR in your hand. And I wanted to say James Kelly's head kind of looks like the warped wall from the American Ninja Warrior. It's hard to get up there. I'll just tell you that. I know I can beat Mona I'm going to tear her ticket up. I'll tell you that much. I know I can do this, and I know I can run all day. Not run all day. I want to be racked. I want a golden ticket, and I know I can do it. And I just ate a big-ass bowl of Honey Smacks, so I know. But, yeah, I'm out.
Actually, she's Jolene 2.0. I take it back. There is another Jolene. It's Lauren. She can run all day, yo. Also on your list. Again, not my list. This is your proposed list for the Hack Off 2019. Andy in Rockland. Andy, first of all, it is very nice to meet you. You're on the air. Andy, how are you?
Damn it. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andy. What's on your mind? What's going on? What motivated you to call?
Very good. I called because I like you.
You like what?
I don't know. I like your voice. I like.
You like what?
My basil.
Andy and Rockland, I like you, Andy. I like your calls and your basil. Obviously, Dr. Dave in Chicago made your list.
While you spend your time perfecting the perfect selfie, I spend my day recovering, saving dying children. Oh, sorry, Jim. I'm done.
No. You don't like. Would you send one of your dying children to him? Would you send one of your healthy children to him? And, of course, your favorite of all, Rex in the ABQ.
Hey, clones, if you're going, take it easy on those $2 pimento cheese sandwiches. Just because you can afford to eat 10 of them doesn't mean you should. I don't want to tune in and see some clones squatting on the edge of the Hogan Bridge, taking a giant curly growler into Ray's Creek.
Anyway, you don't like that. I'm not going to lie. Like that. When I look at that list, and I listen to that list, that's pretty deep. I don't agree with the entire list, but I could see where we can make a case for almost everybody on it. Here's where I come out quickly. If I were going to seed this thing, bracket style, 1-8, with a 1 seed being the favorite to win, and the worst of the worst, and the 8 seed being the least likely to suck, here's how I'd put it, quickly. The 8 seed is Rex. Here's the thing about Rex. I don't think Rex is a hack. I think Rex is a class clown. I think the guy's a joker. I think the guy's immature. A brand damaging caller. But he's not a hack. He's like Slash and Brentwood. Different angle. Well, a launch angle, to be accurate. But let's not act like he's bad at what he does. You might not like what he does, but he's not bad at what he does. He's not a hack. He's a class clown. That was not the point of the hack-off. The hack-off was for the worst of the worst and hacks. 7 seed, Matt in L.A. Again, not a hack to me. Matt is a high-volume shooter that all of you hate. But the guy actually has made the show better on occasion. Now we're getting into people who might actually belong, might deserve it. A 6 seed, Andy in Rockland. Andy could do some damage in the hack-off, no doubt. I've got no idea how she would show up or if she would show up at all. 5 seed, to me, Lauren in Naples. It's been a minute since Lauren has called, but no doubt, she could take that thing down if she wanted to. 4 seed, Parody Larry, hacky as hell. I'd have him higher up if we'd not heard everything that he's had to say and do so many times before. That's the problem with Larry. Nothing he could do in the hack-off would be surprising at all, unless maybe he ditched his parodies and brought back that one-off character, Smack Larry. 3 seed, Jeff in San Antonio. I'm a Jeff guy. I've got his back. I always have. I always will. But I'm the only one. And if he started crying during the hack-off while telling everybody how much of a badass he was, look the hell out. That would be his event to lose. It'd be him against the field. 2 seed, Dr. Dave. Still waiting on this guy to ever finish a call. The next call he finishes will be the first call he finishes. No doubt he'd be on a top-tier favorite to win the event. And if we're talking about the 1 seed, the guy who's got the best look at it, it's Josh in Detroit. Josh, I also like you. I like that you love this show. I think you're a great guy. Problem is, I think that you think you're the best caller ever, and you have no idea that you're not. That's the kind of delusion that you would need. The kind of delusion that would make you the Alabama football of the hack-off. So, ask yourselves this hypothetical question, clones. Is what I just laid out something you actually want to hear? Do some real soul-searching. Be honest with yourselves. And then hit me up on Twitter and email. Is it something you actually want to listen to? It could not carry an entire program. Give you a good hour, maybe a little more than an hour. Does that really sound like something that you would set time aside for? I can't imagine the answer is yes. But if you hate yourselves and me that much, to put together another hack-off. Who'd win it? Who'd win it? Kind of glad we played that out. That might have been worth it. All right, here's a guy right here. He's the eighth seed in my mind, a guy who could never win because he's not hacky. Let's go to Albuquerque. Rex in the ABQ. Rex, you heard me. I laid it all out. Is this something you want to be a part of?
Romy, I'd like to take this opportunity to accept my nomination to the hack-off, but there's no point in bringing it back because I'm going to win it every single year. I'm the bottle on the top shelf. I'll blow these suckers out like the apple tartlets at Crapplebee's.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Rex, on brand. On brand, and your brand is horrible. I hate to say this. He's no genius, but he's too smart to be in the hack-off. He's just that the hack-off was not made for a guy like that. That guy knows what he's doing. That's the inside joke. He's in on the joke. The other ones who were in the hack-off were not really in on the joke. So, do you want me to bring it back or not? Is there enough there for me to bring it back? I don't see it. I really don't see it. All right, so that's just a side topic because one of the biggest topics on this show is the show itself. So, I thought that if I just addressed it, and I laid out what it would look like and what it would feel like, y'all would understand the hack-off no longer works. It worked back then, but it doesn't work now. I thought that I could get you off that point. The problem is, in doing what I did, it only made you want it more. It only made you think or believe that it would work even better now than it did then. I'm looking at the reaction. Rome, that was the best segment I have heard since 2013. I'm taking Lauren in Naples, regardless of the Stucknut odds. Jeff from the 919, Ward Dr. Dave actually passing out during his hack-off call.
I'm your clone guy.
That's Lauren. Hey, Jeff, you're entitled to your opinion, no matter how wrong it is. Jeff, that's not the best segment you've heard since 2013. Because I've done every segment you've heard since 2013. And I'm telling you that was not the best. Far from it. I've done worse, but I've done much better. See how Twitter feels about this. At Roll My Tide, it's not what we want, it's what we need. Hashtag hack off. Hey, don't start hashtagging that. Do not start hashtagging it like it's a thing. At Willie Beeman 1, retire the hack off. Something that beautiful is not meant to last forever. I agree with that. And Mike in Toledo, Andy is the sixth seed? She can barely string a sentence together. Oh, now we're debating the mythical seeds, the hypothetical seeds. At Chris Curry, 317 tweets, in 20 plus years of listening, I have never once called, emailed, faxed, or tweeted this show. Today is the day. I need the hack off back in my life. Hey, Curry, if I did a simple search, would it turn up like 500 tweets from you and 100 emails? Or are you really telling the truth? Are you telling me that in 20 years of listening to this show, you have never once been motivated, either out of anger or any other emotion, to call, email, fax, tweet, or participate in any other way? The hack off brought you in for the first time after 20 years. I'm going to search that out, Curry. There's no way that's true. Hey, Curry, already I've turned up two tweets from 2012. Caught in a lie, my man. At R. Smith, 0906 tweets, in times like these, the hack off will bring this country together like nothing has ever before. My money is on Dr. Dave. Benny and Wisco tweets, all of my money is on Jeff in San Antonio for the latch off. Bro, breastfeeding smack? Ben? So I mentioned the eight that you want to put in the field. As soon as I came out of that take, the eighth seed himself, Rex, called, and he got run like he always does. When I mentioned it earlier, Matt in LA became a topic. Tyler in Shredmonton referred to him as Matt De La Weirdo in LA, right? Now, you know that anytime you call Matt out, Matt's going to have something for you because you know Matt's going to hear it. And if Matt doesn't hear it, it will work its way back to Matt. So, we've already heard from the 8th seed. Let's check in with the 7th seed. Again, these are just hypothetical seeds that I just threw out there. Matt in L.A. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Lucky number 7, baby. That's the Mac. How you living?
Good.
I would gladly take the baton of the hack off. Mostly because it's jungle lore, man. And I know that the payoff is a golden ticket. But what's funny to me, though, is that a sad sack, Sledmonton slackjaw, who must be Hyler, and his better half, Matt and Man Kuchfer, they of the pedestrian participation ribbons and Brad and Corona's family jewel covers, Speedo Libido loincloth glory, to offer up a training camp to so-called American hacks is like Canada offering to tutor American NHL clubs in their pursuit of Lord Stan's Cup. Worthless. Hey, Tyler, shut up. Like every Canadian franchise, you two featherweights are not only mine, but America's bitch. So pick up the pieces that I just hacked, you jamba-juicing jerk. Wore Ira Craig skating half pipes on shiplat with gummy wheels. Unwore weak sauce, cordon bleu Canadian kumquat smack. Outro.
Got that, you jamba juice slack jaws. All right, so now I've gotten two RSVPs from the hypothetical 8. Rex is in. Matt in L.A. I love Matt in L.A. too. Matt's like, you know what, Matt? It's not an insult. It's not an insult. It's jungle lore. Hell yes, I'll do that. All right, so we've heard from the 8. We've heard from the 7. And here he is. The odds-on favorite to win. The number one seed. I'm not even asking for RSVPs. They're just coming in. Here's the third of the 8. Josh in Detroit. Hey, Josh, what's going on? If I bring the hack off back, Josh, is that something you'd want to be a part of?
Tim, I'm calling to give you my RSVP call. I just ordered myself an extra anchovy pizza to celebrate this great event. Give me a few weeks, though, Jim, because I'm going to order a 3-piece suit. And so I can get you a fresh picture for it. Another thing, Jim, since my new gloss is Bama Josh in Detroit, I have to represent like that great college and make sure that I own up to the number one seed. Jim, I'm real excited about it. Give me a few weeks, though, because I got to get that suit tailored. And hopefully I don't get sick from my extra anchovy pizza. And my name is now Bama Josh in
Detroit. That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Josh, bro, you are horrible. You are one bad caller. If I do the smack off, you're in. You represent everything that a hack off participant needs to win. That's why you're the one seed. So I didn't even ask for the RSVPs, and now I have 3. And this would make 4. Parody Larry, quickly. Lawrence, if I bring back the hack off, are you in?
Jim, this is Jim in San Antonio. I'd love to be the hack-off. I'm a badass. And please, everyone, buy my baby Jordan diapers. They're already pre-soaked.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Maybe I've not been giving you idiots enough credit. Maybe you are hack enough for me to bring this thing back. This email says, just do it. Funniest bleep ever. My sides hurt from laughing so hard right now. Andrew. We start this hour off by talking to the WBC heavyweight world champion, 40-0, 39 by knockout. Knockouts in all 7 of his title defenses. Deontay Wilder is going up against Tyson Fury Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, live from Los Angeles on Showtime pay-per-view. We are joined by the champ right now, Deontay Wilder. Deontay, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. Glad to be back. How about you guys?
Good, man. I'm great. It's great to have you back. So it's Wednesday of fight week. Let me start right there. How has camp gone for you? How is fight week going?
Camp has been tremendous, tremendously amazing, you know, for me. You know, this has been one of the best camps that I've had in my career, you know. And I can't wait, you know. I keep saying the words, I cannot wait, because I literally cannot wait. You know, we're in the right place at the right time. And this is definitely my time, you know, to shine. And if anyone, you know, have a question asking who is the next best heavyweight in the world, who is the next big thing, you know, December 1st will tell you everything you need to know. You know, if you can't be there, you better click that button, because you don't want to miss this. It's going to be amazing, man.
Deontay Wilder, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Listen, I would argue, and you may have answered it already before I could ask it, I would argue it's the biggest fight of your career. Does it feel that way, and are you approaching it that way?
I mean, every fight is the biggest fight of our careers, because we always thinking about the next step. And without defeating what's in front of us, we can never get to the next step. So it's always the biggest, you know. And I'm made for this. You know, I'm the type of guy that come from a small place, but I shine always under the big lights. You know, I made it in a big world. And come Saturday night, I'm showing everyone why I call myself the baddest man on the planet. You know, when people come to see heavyweights, they come to see knockouts, because the division is built on the big guys with power. One thing for sure, when you come and see a Deontay Wilder fight, you definitely won't be bored. I'm one of the most exciting heavyweights in the division. And when I say I'm going to knock a guy out, I deliver. It's one thing for a guy to promote the fight and say what he's going to do and don't deliver. But it's another thing for a guy to promote a fight and actually give you what he said he's going to do.
Deontay Wilder joining us, WBC heavyweight world champion. That fight's Saturday night. Now, Deontay, when you look at Fury, I mean, styles make fights. When you look at him, he's undefeated. He won the so-called lineal title when he beat Klitschko back in 2015. But after beating him, he was away from the sport for a couple of years. He dealt with a number of issues. He's fought twice in 2018. In his return, what kind of a fighter do you see when you watch those fights?
I mean, I see the fighter that we've always seen for years, a boring fighter. You know, he said he had the IQ of boxing, and, you know, it come in his family background. But, you know, he's never been in the ring with a fighter of my caliber. The things that I'm able to do, you know, he's a 6'7", you know, aqua guy, but he's a 6'9", aqua guy, but I'm a 6'7", mobile, hostile. You know, I got a heart of a lion. I'm a king in the ring. And it's going to be an amazing fight to have two big giants up in the ring doing their thing, you know, doing things that people wouldn't ordinarily see a heavyweight do, you know. In my opinion, Fury had his chance, you know. When he beat Klitschko, you know, he had his opportunity to do whatever he had to do, but he didn't take advantage of it. And better yet, he wanted to go out and party and put that sugar cane in his system And that's what he did. But now it's my turn. It's my time. You in my country, you're amongst my people. Now I'm about to show the world what I've been trying to show them for years, that I am the baddest man on the planet. For there can only be one champion, one face, one name. And he go by the name of Deontay Wilder, baby. I'm here.
Deontay Wilder joining us. That fight Saturday night. Listen, he says, Fury says, that he believes that you and your camp don't know who you're facing. Quote, they think they're fighting some fat English idiot, but they don't know what they've let themselves in for. End quote. Let me ask you that. Do you think that you're fighting some fat English idiot?
You know, with every fighter, we take them in consideration as if they're the best. We look at every fighter, each fight, and if they are the champion, you know, if they were the champion, and he's the lineal champion, so you know we don't look at anyone, no matter what caliber, no matter where they came from, or no matter how their body type looks, you know, we take everybody with caution. We train hard. For I am a champion. I'm a hungry champion. There's a lot of guys that want to be in my position. You know, we don't underestimate anyone. You can't. This is boxing. Anything can happen in boxing. You know, we always say styles make fights, and it does. You know, that's a golden saying in boxing: styles make fights. You know, so we're not taking him lightly. I'm taking him very seriously. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, I don't never overlook a person, but I do a little window shopping. I look through them. I don't look over you, but I'm going to look through you because I see another potential. I see another source. I see another plan that I have for my life and for my children. And first, it must be Tyson Fury. And once I demolish him and defeat him, I go on to the next. I can't wait. If he's thinking that, then let him think that. You know, the game plan that they've been having for me, the things that they've been assuming that we've been thinking, it's all going to go out the window come Saturday night. I can't wait, baby.
Deontay, you mentioned hunger. You mentioned hunger. You're 40-0. You've proven everything there is to prove in this sport. I mean, you're not satisfied. You still have a drive. You still have a hunger. Since you've proven everything there is to prove, where is the hunger coming from? What's driving you at this point?
You know, I still have goals that I've set in this sport. You know, I think each and every time you reach a level, you set certain goals, you know. I told my daughter when she was 1 year old that daddy would be a world champion and be able to support her beyond her means. And I've done that. But now I have other added to the family. And when I look at my kids, my beautiful family, I look at generation wealth, you know. And that's what I'm seeking. I'm seeking generation wealth. I'm just not in this just to do it for me or have the fame. I can care less about all that, but I am doing it for my children. With that being said, you know, I got to give them the best life. I got to be able to secure their life forever. And this is where it starts for me, you know. I don't know what more can I say. I'm so hungry. I'm so ready. I tell these guys, man, my demeanor, my mentality in the ring, my killer instinct in the ring is none other. I'm special in this sport. My grandma said I was anointed by God years ago, and I see everything she said to me. I understand it. I can see it. I can feel it, and I can't wait to get in the ring to display it.
Deontay Wilder, that fight's coming up on Saturday night, Showtime pay-per-view, world champion. You know, there was a time earlier in your career, you and I have talked so many times, but there was a time earlier in your career where you did not get the love that you're getting right now. So what's it like when you're walking around and people run up on you and they ask for a pic or they ask for an autograph or they simply shout, "Bomb Squad"?
Yeah, it's always amazing to see people come up. You know, I people want to understand that I'm a people's person. I love people. I love interacting with people. You know, people wouldn't know that because they only get the perspective of me in the ring or in interviews and see that I have to be so hostile. Or when I speak words, I speak from my heart. So when I speak from my heart, you know, I can come off a little strong. I can make people feel what I say. You know, and that just means just really being into what I say. But outside of boxing, you know, I'm a loving father. I'm a loving man. I'm a guy that speaks positivity. I have positive people around me. You know, we surround positive around us, so we want our results to be positive. And you know, it's just a great feeling at this point in time. You know, just to see people just, you know, coming in, showing love, or if they never heard of me, now they do. Or sometimes, you know, it's going to be some people first fight seeing me. And if it is, then they're for a treat. Because I had a Spuka fight when I fought him in New York, and I almost killed the man in the ring. And there were some people first time, and they got spoiled off of that fight. So each and every time they see me, they want to see more and more. And I bring the pain, and I bring excitement. So, you know, with this fight, it's going to bring more people to be able to put the heavyweight division back on notice and understand that they have a great American champion right here in America that's been here for a long time. But God don't make mistakes. Everybody has his time, and Saturday is my time, baby.
This fight is going to be right here in Los Angeles on Saturday night. Listen, before I let you go, as part of the buildup to the fight, the British television channel BT Sport did a documentary on you. And at one point, Deontay, you broke out a bazooka from your collection, an actual bazooka. Where did you get that, and what's it like having that thing?
I mean, you know, I'm a gun collector. You know, I do live in the South, and we do have open gun carry laws. And you know, but I've always been a gun collector. I've always been fascinated with guns. And, you know, the different styles, different models, different make. You know, I can break down a gun and put it back together, clean it, all that. So I'm really into it, you know. Guns are not dangerous. It's just the people that whip gun make them dangerous. And, you know, with that, you know, I got that from a gun show. You know, I'm always going to the local gun shows or different types of gun shows and purchasing things from there. And, you know, It's for my collection. You know, I'm never planning on using that thing in no form, way, or fashion. You know, it's just good for the collection to have, to clean, and to display. That's about it, you know. So with that being said, I don't feel no power. I don't feel no better of a man that I am, you know, with a bazooka. You know, it's just something for show and tell and for my collection. That's it.
Deontay Wilder, my guest. All right, I can't let you go without a prediction. How does the fight end? What round and what is the punch?
The fight definitely going to end with a knockout. You know, like I always say, I speak it, believe it, receive it, and it becomes mine. So people can look forward to getting dressed, coming to this heavyweight fight. Every time you see a Deontay Wilder fight, you come to see the excitement. I deliver that. So I'm definitely predicting to deliver a knockout. And, you know, this fight with prediction of the rounds, I've never been great at that, you know. But I'm looking, it could be early, it could be late. Depends on how fast I adjust to him. You know, in my heart of hearts, I see this fight can go early to mid-rounds. You know, if anybody out there betting and want to know what my prediction, I can see an early to mid-round knockout. You know, no more, no less. He thinks he's going to be able to outbox me, but that's not going to be the case. I'm going to whoop him just like I did Stavern when people doubted me and said that he will outbox me because they never seen me box before. I had to show people that I have the boxing skill and the will to do it. I'm going to box him, I'm going to beat him up, and then I'm going to knock him out. So you can look forward to me beating him up and then taking him down, baby. I can't wait. USA, we here, baby. Nobody coming to our house. We about to take over. We must protect our house. And I will protect our house come Saturday night at the Staples Center. If you can't make it there, don't worry. You can click that button on Showtime pay-per-view, baby. You just don't want to miss this fight.
Bomb Squad, WBC heavyweight world champion. He is 40-0, 39 by knockout. He has had knockouts in all 7 title defenses. And Deontay Wilder said it best. Wilder v. Fury, Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you cannot be there in Los Angeles, just click Showtime pay-per-view. Deontay, great to have you back. Have a great week. Good luck. We'll definitely be watching.
My man, blessings. You have a wonderful day.
Dear Jim, would you rather have the hack off on a Wednesday or a Friday? The choice is yours. Regards, salesperson, Drew in West L.A. Yeah, he's heard my bit on that. So when I was in sales, I tried to sell commercial time for radio. I tried to sell dictation equipment for Harris Lanier. I tried to sell Toshiba phone systems. I tried to sell industrial laundry supplies. I tried to sell a lot of things, and I didn't sell jack. But a few of those stops, and I read every sales book, every written. I took the Dale Carnegie sales course. I'll never forget my old man signing me up for that. So Jay, my dad's name was Jay. I call him Jay because when I went to work for him, he said, you can call me Jay. I said, you got it, Jay. So Jay drops me off at Dale Carnegie, the sales course. And he rolls up on the sales guy teaching the course. And he goes, so what have you sold? I'm like, Jay, that's pretty badass. Calling this guy out like that. It was pretty expensive, that course. Jay says, what have you sold? And the sales professor looks at him and goes, the Dale Carnegie course, of course. And my old man's like, that's what you've sold? You're teaching people how to sell and you've never sold anything? Good job, Jay. It's well done. Anyway, one of the things I learned, and Drew knows this, I had these little transparencies where they'd have us cold call. We'd work the phones. You know, you'd call like 150 people a day to try to set 5 appointments. And they'd have you say things like, well, hello, Mr. Prospect. I'm going to be in your neighborhood on the 13th and the 15th. What works better for you? Because if you give them a choice, they have to answer. What works better, the 13th or the 15th? And some really smart CEO is going to say, the 13th. Great, sir. 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock? 3 o'clock, I guess. Great. See you on the 13th at 3 o'clock. Click. And then the CEO is like, what just happened? That guy Jedi mind tricked me. I have to do an appointment now. Yeah, that always worked really well. Every time I tried that, I felt like the other guy wanted to punch me in the face. What do you think? I'm an idiot? The 13th or the 15th? Neither. Neither, Pud. Never call me again. Let's see. Rome, the hack-off in 2018 is not a good idea. The hack-off used to be for guys who could not make the show better, but they thought they could. With Hawk producing the show, these idiots sneak by every single day. Worthen Nooch and Kyle in Green Bay being sleepers in the hack-off. Dan in Denver. All right, here's what happened. Alvin and I were talking about it. It's true. The hack-off stopped working because the hacks became too self-aware, right? The first couple of years, they just showed up as the hacks that they were. But then they became self-aware. Then they became pseudo-celebrities. Then they started to act a certain way. Not the way they were, but the way they thought they were supposed to be. They started to act the way they thought that we wanted them to be. We wanted them to be hacks. We wanted them to be themselves. They became too self-aware. And then it didn't work. They overthought it. They tried to be something they weren't. They got caught up in the celebrity of it all. So that's why I stopped it. But maybe there's been enough time. I know this. I mentioned 8 hypotheticals, and these people are all RSVPing. The so-called hypothetical 2-seed wants in. The Doc, Dr. Dave in Chicago. Hey, Doc, do you like the idea of a hack-off, and are you in if I have it?
I'll be in, I guess, but I'd rather be safe and die in children. I'm out.
All right. I'm in, but I'd rather be saving dying children. I don't know, dude. Everybody that I've met or talked to or heard speak who, quote, save dying children, they all come off in a really different manner than you do. Like, they're smart. They're serious. They understand their place, their gifts. Dude, you're none of those things. But if I have the hack-off, you can be in. Here's somebody else. How many of these things have we hit now? That was the 2. Here is the 6. Andy in Rockland. Andy, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Andy, how are you?
I'm good. So apparently I was nominated by the clones for the something, the hack-off.
Right. How do you feel about that?
I don't really know what it is, but I guess I can do my research and find out. But I'm down, I think.
All right, Andy. So you're honored, but you're not sure what the hack-off is, but you'll find out. In my mind, well, Andy, you're in. If we do it, you're in.
Are kind of updating me a little bit, so.
Yeah, you update. You update. I'll update. I'll keep you informed. You're in. Nice job, Andy. All right. I mean, she sounds perfect for it. Let me give you an idea of how this thing sounded back in 2011. This is how it sounded back in 2011. Here's the 2011 hack-off promo.
Doggy dog.
Doggy dog.
Hack-off 2011.
April 1st. April Fools. April Hacks Day. We're taking the worst callers on this show and looking for the best call from that group. The best of the worst gets to be in the smack-off.
Okay.
Let's get it going. Hack-off, baby. Eddie in Boise.
Eddie in Boise inaugural hack-off is brought to you by Avine. When you're nervous and intimidated when on a phone call, grab for
Avine.
Those losers hook me with the drunk. It's all gravy, you know. Put me with the, you know.
Jason in Ottawa, the star linebacker.
My friends are texting me. Girls are calling me, Jason, like they did in high school.
Jolene in Farmington.
See, my friend pulling right into Walmart, and I texted him real quick, and I said, what's Walmart got? Said, your mama in bulk. Yo.
Ryan in Wichita.
You know, I imagine Jolene looks like 4'10", 250-pound Tom Selleck.
Matt in Cleveland, a.k.a.
Tarzan, because I'm about to be the king of this jungle. Everyone should just quit right now. Y'all might as well try to join the jerk-off.
Alex in Salt Lake.
Oh, I had to get a baby out of the house.
My hat on Sunday, falcon on top,
eating the cheese.
And there's a live bird, not dead birds like Antarctica.
Johnny the Exterminator in Vegas.
Hey, I just flew in from Boise. Man, is my nose sore from all the meth I did. Tell me I'm a smack because I take.
Larry in San Francisco.
Mr. Haney threw the biggest pick. Keep Manhattan, but where was that onside kick?
Aaron in Canton.
They got a lot of nice moles out there. How? A mole.
Jesus in Chicago.
Losers to the left of me. Drooless to the right. Here I am stuck in the hack off with you.
Ray Ray.
Dateline, Court Canaveral, here. Arsenic, whatever. On your mama's whatever.
And of course the defending champ, Vinny Mac.
Yeah! Don't rack me. Put me on top shelf. I'm out.
I'm down the line. I know I won.
The hack off. April 1st. You don't aspire to it, you just end up there.
Trophy you can put on
the baby.
Dad's
in a position where
farmer.
Not me.
Take a shot. The hack off.
Damn, that sounded good. That sounded good. Quickly to the phones. My man, Bo in Nashville. Bo, brother, what's going on?
Rome, what's up, my man?
What's up? What's good?
Hey, look, we're going to do it like this. Josh, Ricks, and that crying-ass dude that look like, seemed like he needs somebody to change his diaper. I'm not going to continue to let y'all call my man Rome so and disrespect him like that, man. He tried to give y'all some props, man. He tried to give y'all some hypothetical ranking, and y'all ain't going to take advantage of it, man. I'm just like this, man. I get up and go to work every day, try to pass my day, listen to my man Rome so to get me through the day. But what I'm not going to do is let y'all jerks, piece of trash, keep calling and disrespecting my man Rome so without giving me these three things. And I'm pretty sure Rome can have my back on this. All I want, man, is some content, some delivery. Man, that's some style, man. Y'all got to have some energy, man. Bring the noise, man, and I'm going to ride with you till the wheels fall off, Rome. So look here. We're not doing it in 19. We staying sucker free in 2019. But Rex, Josh, and the little baby powder dude, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get y'all a jack-in-the-box for Christmas. And when you wind it up, you're going to see the 6'6 AT&T guy pop out and smack the dog out of all of y'all. I wish it wasn't the FCC. And I didn't respect Rome so much because I had a couple of bombs to drop on y'all. But I respect my man.
Save it, Bo. Bo, save it for the podcast. Drop the bombs on the podcast, my man. Bo in Nashville. Really quickly, Lauren in Naples. She's an invite if I do this thing. Lauren, girlfriend, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Romy?
What's up? How you doing, Lauren?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you in?
I'm in, 100%.
Is that something you could win?
Oh, for sure. I can lay the smack down, for sure.
Give me a for example. Give me something on the way out the door. What do you got? Give me something from Mona, maybe.
From Mona? She's nothing to speak of. If it's even a her, I don't even know.
Oh, Lord. No. Quickly, speak of the devil. You see what I did here? Here's Mona. Mona in Knoxville. Hi, Mona. What's up? How are you, Mona?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Poor
how about
little
you?
Lauren. She's still begging for her golden ticket and being in the hack off and everything like that. For her to invoke my name, please have her on the hack off. That's where she belongs. You taught her to beg for a ticket. Like I said before, teach her how to jump, fetch, and maybe play dead.
You got it, Mona. Mona in Knoxville. Wow, this hack off. Picking up steam. This is incredible. Of the hypothetical eight, the only person who did not RSVP was Jeff in San Antonio. I didn't set that up at all. He was the only one who did not RSVP. It's not too late, Jeff. We are talking some Vegas Golden Knights hockey. We are joined by their head coach. He is the 2018 Jack Adams Award winner. Led the Golden Knights to the Western Conference Championship in their inaugural season. Vegas beat Chicago 8-3 last night. They're in third in the Pacific. They're at Vancouver tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Gerard Gallant is my guest. Gerard, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good, good. So you beat Chicago last night, as I mentioned, off the top, 8-3 in their place. That was the most goals they'd allowed at home in more than a decade, the most goals Vegas has ever scored. What did you make of the way your guys showed up and dominated from the outset?
You know what? We had a 3-0 lead after the first period, but we didn't play well at all. We were really lucky in the first period. Fleury was outstanding in the net, and we got a couple of good breaks. So we didn't play a good first period, but we were fortunate enough to be up 3-0, and that pretty well carried us. We played real good hockey in the second and third period. And to be honest with you, Chicago had a tough game last night. They got some unlucky breaks, a couple of goals that went in off their defensemen. So they didn't play as bad as it looked, but we got some unfortunate breaks for us last night.
Gerard Gallant joining us. All right, you mentioned Fleury. Today is actually Marc-Andre Fleury's birthday. He had a shutout streak of more than 150 minutes snapped last night. But bottom line, what has he meant to your team and the franchise overall?
Well, he's a leader of our group. I mean, he's a number one goalie, obviously. He's one of the best goalies in the NHL, and he just keeps doing it for us. He gives us a lot of confidence to play our game. When we make mistakes defensively, he covers up for them, and that was a perfect example of last night's game. So he's been the leader of our group and just a great person and a great goaltender, and he's done it for a long time.
All right, so last night was also the start of a three-game road trip, which includes Vancouver tomorrow night, as I mentioned. You've got Edmonton on Saturday. When you faced Connor McDavid earlier this month, you called him the best player in the league. What is it about him that makes him so good, and then how do you go about slowing him down?
Well,
Well, his speed is incredible. His first three strides is from stop to top speed is unbelievable, and there's nobody in the league like him. He's a great player. He's fast. He's quick. And, you know, if you're going to slow him down, you got to get in his way early. You can't try and catch him when he's full speed. You got to get him before he gets the puck and read the play. And, you know, you got to have a defensive scheme against him. But it's tough. Like I said, he's so fast and quick, and he's shooting the puck real well this year also.
You know, my sense is you're always going to be somebody who's going to be about the next game, the next challenge. You're going to focus on the task in front of you. So I know you're already locked into Vancouver. But all that said, if you took a moment and you look back on last season, it was an amazing season. What kind of thoughts would you have?
Yeah, no, real positive. I mean, obviously last year everything went our way except for the last game when we lost in the Stanley Cup Final in Game 5. We had an outstanding year. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better season. I mean, when we started the year off, we had no idea about playoffs or being close to the playoffs. And I just think we got off to an incredible start, and it built a lot of confidence in our group and on our team. And we just took it one game at a time, and that was truly all we did. We were one game at a time, and then by Christmas time, we knew we had a good, solid team, and everybody in the league knew we were a good team. So it wasn't like we were lucky. We played well for over 100 games last year.
Gerard Gallant is joining us. You know, every member of your organization that I've talked to over the past year has talked about the idea that people had about hockey in Las Vegas and that it certainly was not going to work, much less work the way it did. Yet I would say that city and that city embraced that team almost unlike any team in any sport in any city. So I'm curious, how would you describe the relationship between the fans and the team in year two?
You know what? It's been incredible. Nothing's changed. If anything, it's getting better. So, like I said, last year was an incredible year. Our first game, we didn't know what to expect. It was a sold-out building. It was loud. It was noisy. It was crazy. It was just like a party atmosphere. And really, it hasn't changed from day one. It's every night. It doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday night or a Friday night. The noise in that building is unbelievable. And they're just out there having a good time and a party. And they love our players. They really do.
Gerard, what do you think that is? I mean, can you even explain that? Like, I understand that you guys play a certain way. I understand there's a lot of character in that room. But that love affair between that town and that team when they haven't had the NHL before, it's kind of a mind-blowing thing. How do you explain it?
Well, that's what I think it is. It's their first pro team, sports team that they really got behind. And, you know, we're a Vegas-born team. And our players did an amazing job getting in the community last year and going to schools and everywhere else. And, you know, they went everywhere. So I just think they love our players. Our players treated them really well. And obviously, success had a lot to do with it, too. So, but, you know, it hasn't stopped this year. Every game sold out. Every game, it's fun to come to our building. And, you know, every visiting player and every visiting coach talks about coming to Vegas because it's a great place to play and a great atmosphere.
All right, so finally then, it hasn't changed. The way the fans feel about the team has not changed. If anything, it's gotten better. One of the oft-repeated phrases from last season was that everybody in that room had something to prove, and then you go out and you win the Western Conference in your first year of existence. It would be easy for guys maybe to start thinking they no longer had something to prove. Have you noticed any drop at all in hunger or drive from your players?
Well, you know what, we had a tough start to the year, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, I'm not one to make excuses, but honestly, we missed three of our top four players in the first month of the season. I mean, we had a couple of bad injuries with Paul Stastny and Eric Halla. Alex Tuck missed the first 10 games, and obviously, one of our top defensemen, Nate Schmidt, was suspended for the first 20 games. So we had some, you know, we had some work to do, and we kept battling. And our goal was, we had a lot of road games the first part of the season, too. So we just wanted to stick in the race and stay there, and we've done that so far. And now it's time to take off a little bit, and hopefully that's going to happen for our group.
And then finally, it would have been easy at that point when things were not going your way to panic or to freak out. From the outside, none of that seemed to happen. What was the mindset inside? Was there any kind of case of nerves or panic that you saw in anybody?
No, not at all. Our ownership group, Bill Foley's a great man, and he just said, you know, keep doing what you're doing, work the best you can. And George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon and management staff, they were supporting everything we've done. And like I said, we knew it was an uphill battle, and we had to keep pushing and keep working hard. And it gives other players opportunities to step in their lineup and play bigger roles, and that's exactly what happened with our group.
Golden Knights, third in the Pacific. They are at Vancouver tomorrow night. Their head coach, Gerard Gallant, our guest. Gerard, appreciate the relationship. Always good to have you on this show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the time.
Talk to you soon. Thank you. My biggest takeaway from that is, in year number two, the fans have lost nothing. They love the team as much as they did last year, and maybe even more so. It's an amazing relationship. Really unique relationship. Much like the worst callers in this show, slammed into the hack off. A unique relationship. This guy was not a part of the eight. His name, though, has been invoked and dropped. He has been in the hack-off before. If anybody would know, it's Fabian in Los Angeles. Fabian, respectfully, you would know. Is bringing this thing back a good idea or a bad idea? Where do you come out?
Well, I would say good. See, it would be very good. Hey, and shout out to the Dick Flowers and to Bella V up in Canada. They kind of like pushed me to call you, bro. Look, this is the way it is. Well, the last hack off, bro, if you could remember, I was the last call. And I feel responsible for that thing going down because I thought it was a pretty good of a hack move to give out my phone number, right? Which I had to change. I was going to drop a bomb. Yeah, I was forced to change it because, you know how the clones are, right? So anyways, I feel left out. I'm a clone. A hack. Once a hack, always a hack. To me, I'm gravy. I know that I wasn't mentioned, whatever, but I thought I'd just remind a few people that I'm a hack, right?
So, Fabian, what you're saying is you want in. You want to remind people, hey, don't forget about me. I'm a hack. If there's going
to
be a hack off.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're
to
saying.
Me, hey, I'm game, baby.
Good night now.